apologize for our late start this afternoon. Our appointment ran a little longer than we had thought. We're going to start today by first getting these two work sessions out of the way on the House bills. House Bill 3426 is where I'd like to start. So we'll open a work session on that bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I hope you have a copy of the Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3426. Earlier this week, we were studying the Dash 3 amendment, and the committee was looking in particular at what in the Dash 4 amendment is page 2, lines 22 to 24, dealing with the preventing of an escape of an inmate from a Department of Corrections institution. And on page 3, you'll see that Department of Corrections has worked with legislative counsel to limit that use of deadly physical force to prevent escape, so that corrections officer may not use deadly physical force to prevent the escape of an inmate from a minimum security institution or custody outside an institution while the inmate is assigned to an inmate work detail or during the transport or other supervised activity. And here's if the inmate is classified by the department as a minimum custody and the inmate is not being transported or supervised with an inmate who has been classified by the department as medium custody or higher, that's the limitation. Lines 8 to 11, that's to make it clear that if there are both high security and minimum security inmates together, we're not asking the guards to make some kind of decision about which ones.
Right.
The jailbreak amendment. Representative Przanski.
Mr. Chair, I had a chance to talk to DOC, and I know a couple other members have too. I want to thank them for being willing to make the amendments. And my understanding, this really isn't going to change their practices. It's what they've had within their own policy and rules.
Right.
We're just putting it into the statute, which I think for everyone who's reading it will have a clearer and better understanding of how that procedure actually works. I really appreciate them working with myself and others in bringing this forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Przanski. I'll take that as a motion.
It is.
To move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3426. Is there any further discussion? Representative Barker, this was your bill, and we're moving these amendments. I assume you're comfortable with them as the Dash 4s are currently written. Okay. Anybody else? All right. So the motion is to adopt the Dash 4s. Any objection? The 4s are in the bill. Representative Barker?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3426 with the Dash 4s to the floor of the due pass.
Representative Barker moves House Bill 3426 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I just have a quick question, Mr. Chair, but I just had a chance to review the Dash 4s, and I haven't had a chance to really absorb them. But am I correct in assuming that a person employed by the Department of Corrections who is given this authority would be different from a security officer at a local facility such as a county jail?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, when you say different, meaning different certification or?
No, with that, I'm assuming that a local corrections officer is not an employee of the Department of Corrections.
Mr. Ackerman, that's correct. Representative Ackerman,
if so,
correct.
Are we leaving those people unprotected from...
Representative Ackerman, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, it does not deal with those local institution officers, and this does not address them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
I believe when we look on page 2 of the amendment at section 4, if I'm correct in this, they're limiting it in the discussion to the Department of Correction institutions as compared to, let's say, local institutions.
Right. So I think, Representative Ackerman, if your point is that this is really addressing the issue of the use of deadly force by people who are under the custody of the Department of Corrections, that is an appropriate reading, I think, of the amendment. It is limited to that issue. Now, the broader part of the bill, which we're amending, deals with the use of deadly force by sworn officers, which is a broader part of the entire bill. But what got us hung up in the last discussion was primarily this issue of use of deadly force by people in the custody of the Department of Corrections.
Right.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, I would point out also that the current ORS 161265 deals with a guard in any correctional facility and the use of force within the correctional facility, and would deal with deadly force in those situations.
So they're covered under existing law?
Correct.
All right.
Okay, so the motion is to move the bill as amended by the Dash 4 amendments. Any further discussion? Call the roll, Ann.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Kilmore?
Excused.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Mazonski?
Aye.
Representative Federley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Excused.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 3426 is amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Barker, assume you'd like to carry your bill.
I would. Thank you.
Okay. We're now going to address in work session House Bill 3329. Colleagues, this bill passed out of committee and was referred back to the committee by my motion on the floor. The issue that we're attempting to address in this bill you have before you in the Dash A5 amendments. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3329. And if you look at the A5 amendments, there was concern with respect to the provision that was in the bill that discussed granting the Attorney General's Office the authority to be lead counsel in a class action lawsuit. And the concern was that the breadth of authority was greater than some people were comfortable with. Working with the Treasurer's Office, the interested parties, and the Attorney General's Office, you have the A5 amendments, which is a limiting amendment, limiting that authority to actions involving a claim relating to a security as defined by ORS 59015. So that's the issue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krasinski.
Ready for a motion. I'll move the Dash A5 into 3329.
Representative Krasinski moves the Dash A5 amendments into House Bill 3329. Is there discussion on the amendment or on the motion? Okay. Any objection? The bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, before I make the next motion, I know that someone that came by and raised some issues with me. I'm not sure if the Chair has had any contact with anyone. If you wanted to have any other testimony, if you want to have the motion, I'm ready to give it.
Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the House Bill 3329 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves House Bill 3329 as amended by the new Dash A5 amendments to the floor for the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I understand some of the benefits to be had by having a large national firm do the no-call list, but does it bother any of the rest of you that we have a local outfit that's doing it, doing quite successfully, and we're asking them essentially out of the business, if I understand it correctly?
Anyone want to respond to Representative Anderson's comment?
No one, no.
You were a no on the bill as it passed out, yes. I think, the last time, Representative Anderson. I assumed you were going to be a no this time.
Continue
because that part hasn't changed.
Right.
Well, I assume you're going to be a no again, too, Representative Jensen.
I also had concerns, but that's been dealt with by the Attorney General being limited to governmental and not taking the lead for in private, where there are private entities suing. I like that change.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, the motion is to move 3329 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and call the roll.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
No.
Representative Crummell
is excused.
Representative
Pearson? Aye.
Representative Mazonski?
Aye.
Representative Federley?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Nay.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 3329 moves back to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Carrier assigned will remain the same. That was you, Representative Brzozinski.
Yep.
All right. We're now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2900.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and you should have the dash two amendments to House Bill 2900, and you should also have a fiscal statement. I apologize. I don't think you have an SMS, but I think I can explain what the bill does. The bill makes it a traffic offense to refuse to take a breath test if the person is requested to take a breath test in accordance with the DUI laws of the state of Oregon, and the fine for such would be at least $500 and not more than $1,000. And then on the last page of the dash two amendments in section 5 subsection 6, the fines collected as a result of citations issued by a member of the Oregon State Police, so that would only be for the Oregon State Police, they shall be deposited into a state police account established to be used for the Department of State Police in enforcing laws concerning DUII. So that means that if another officer was conducting the DUII investigation, the fines would proceed into the criminal fines, fees, and assessments like any other fine.
All right. We've got some people who would like to testify on the bill. Mr. and Mrs. Pratt and Don Phillips, if you want to come up all together. Who wants to lead off? Don?
I'll let the Pratts lead off because I think they've been doing all the heavy lifting on this bill, and we've heard the arguments pro and con, and we're here basically just to talk about the amendments and answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ann Pratt. I'm from Springfield. I didn't really prepare a statement today. I just wanted to talk to you. I just can't say enough how important this bill is, especially as a way to get the drunk driver off the road. It has several things that we believe will help do that. We feel that it will prompt the person who refuses to blow to do so if there's a fine attached to it. We feel that it will have a deterrent value, and that in this time when our police and our courts are kind of at a disadvantage, it seems just really important to have all the tools necessary and available to make people think twice about driving, and this would also identify the people who are out there, help identify them, and get them off our roads and make it a safer place. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pratt?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I did hand out a couple weeks ago answers to your questions from the first portion of the hearing, and you should have that in your bill file. I hope that you do. But I think that we've pretty much addressed those concerns and really strongly recommend that you give a favorable determination on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt. Don?
Don Phillips, for the record, from Representative Randy Miller's office. If you have questions about the specific amendments, I can go into a little more detail, but we did ask state police to give us kind of an estimate on how much money they're now spending on DUII enforcement efforts, and you heard the testimony in the first public hearing from Jeff Ross with the state police. He runs their intoxilizer the unit, and they spend about $1.75 million per biennium on the intoxilizer program, which, as he described it, they maintain all the intoxilizers throughout the state, make sure they're in good working order, and with the budget cuts, they've had to cut back significantly on the number of units they have out there that are in good working order and the amount that they're able to make available to local police agencies. The local police agencies don't have their own units. They get them from state police. And so this will be a crucial piece of legislation to provide some funding so that they can get those machines back up into full strength and full numbers. They also, under this bill, according to Mr. Ross and the information he's provided us, under this legislation, they would have approximately 650-700 refusals handled by state police officers throughout the year, and this legislation would raise up to probably $1.5 million for them over the course of the biennium, which will go a long way toward helping cover some of their expenses when it's related to DUII. And as you'll see in the fiscal that you should have in your packet, this legislation raises up to almost $5 million for the biennium to be shared, of course, between state police and the local agencies. I know you've looked at a lot of bills this session with folks coming in wanting to make our laws tougher and having no way to pay for them in the courts and cover the added expense of administering these increased penalties. And we're bringing you not only the tools but the mechanism to provide the funding as well.
Thank you, Don. Are there questions for either the Pratts or Ms. Phillips? Yes, Representative Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Phillips, the only question I have is, has there been some discussion with the state police how they're actually going to utilize their accounting system to make certain that the money that is brought into that account will, in fact, be used for this intended purpose?
Chair Williams and Representative Prozanski, we have had long talks with state police about all the things they spend DUII functions on. Some of it is used with federal grant money right now. Some comes from ODOT. And as I mentioned, just a couple of the things that they would be willing to spend or be able to use the money for is those intoxilizers, maintaining them, being able to get out with their safety awareness programs during peak DUII seasons like the holidays. So they have a number of different functions that this money would be well spent on. And as far as we're concerned, it wouldn't go far enough. They could always use a little more when it comes to something like this.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
You may.
It's more on the accounting part as to they describe to you how they're going to be able to account for the money that's coming in and then dispersing that against the excellent programs.
We haven't gotten into that detail. We were hoping that they would develop administrative rules for the account that's spelled out in the bill. So.
Thank you.
Anything else? Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to, at your request, go through real briefly and make a couple points on Section 2 of the bill, where it says that the commits the offense of refusal if the person refuses to take a breath test, which is when requested to do so in accordance with the provisions of ORS 813100. That references the implied consent law, and I want to make it clear that under implied consent law, it's only applicable for a person who's arrested, so there's a probable cause of arrest for DUII, and then there's reasonable grounds to believe that the person is DUII. I want to make it clear that this is not something that allows this to be applied in any, you know, situation outside what currently would be permissible. The next section, 3, ORS 813130, this is the what is the substance of the implied consent form that before someone is asked to take a breath test, the officer goes through and reads through the implied consent form with them so that they would be advised of the fact that refusal would constitute this traffic offense. And then I think Section 4 and 5, I already went through. Section 4 just makes clear this is part of the motorist implied consent law and the Oregon Vehicle Code. And then, of course, Section 5 has to do with the fines. So I think that
covers
it.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the panel? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We have David Bill.
Chair and committee members, I hadn't really planned to speak, but I do hope you pass this bill. And one thing I can say as a prosecutor, it's real difficult when we get cases when people refuse a breath test and we're faced with the determination, do we prosecute them or not? And I can tell you from experience, and I know Mr. Prozanski is a prosecutor also, that people that refuse the breath test seem to get better deals, they're less likely to get prosecuted, and they're more likely to get away with it. And I think it would aid us, and I think we'd get more people giving us breath tests so we could make just decisions in our cases. And then the other nice thing is if people do continue to refuse, it will raise a lot of money for the state. And I do think it will assist us and making the right choices. And it shouldn't infringe on any rights in any way, because people are supposed to take the breath test anyways, and we can only ask them to take a breath test if the police have probable cause in the first place. So it shouldn't change anything as far as their rights go. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Bill?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, David's an assistant district attorney in Lane County, district attorney's office.
Okay, thank you. For. Did we make him identify himself
No.
for the record? Oh, I appreciate you pointing that out. Sorry, Mr. Bill. It's in the afternoon on the Friday of the session. So, thanks very much. If there are no questions, then we'll go ahead and have you stand down. And then I've got Susan Russell from OCDLA.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Susan Ross on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. My comments will be very brief. We have concerns about the creation of a new offense arising from a failure to take a breath test, a voluntary action. We believe that the current law really sort of addresses, the problem that results and society's concerns by the implied consent law providing that if an individual fails to take a breath test, that their license is immediately suspended, that revokes their driving privileges, addresses any concerns when we're talking with probable cause to believe that the defendant is driving under the influence, removes that individual from the risk of creating further injury or driving under the influence by immediately revoking the license. And we believe that that is a more appropriate way, that it does work, and creating a new offense could create a number of problems, some foreseen and some unforeseen. It would not be a defense to this offense that the individual was in fact not driving under the influence. That's not a defense under the implied consent provision, and obviously that would be a concern to our organization.
Okay, are there questions for Ms. Russell? All right, thank you, Susan. Is there anyone else here to testify on 2900? All right, I'll close the public hearing, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2900.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
Move dash twos in the House Bill 2900.
Representative Przanski moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2900. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? The dash twos are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
I move House Bill 2900 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves House Bill 2900 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any discussion on that motion? All right. Go ahead and call the roll here.
Representative Barclay?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Cromwell?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Przanski?
Aye.
Representative
Federer? Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2900 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll assign myself as carrier. House Bill 2901 will open a public hearing and invite up Mr. and Mrs. Pratt and Don Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, briefly, I think you heard testimony from several people on this, including the Pratts, Ms. Lovelace, Doug Harkleroad, Mr. Ville, who's here, Kelly Taylor. I think Ms. Representative Barker even testified. This is the bill that would require an applicant for an issuance of a driver license to acknowledge that driving under the influence can result in serious injury or death and an agreement not to drive under the influence of intoxicants.
All right. Well, welcome back to Pratt's and Ms. Phillips. So we just want to go right to Mrs. Pratt, and then we'll
be fine.
Do the same thing we did the last time.
You bet.
My name is Ann Pratt, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, I didn't prepare a statement. I just want to talk to you about House Bill 2901. We feel it's a very good idea to have every person sign a statement acknowledging the risks of drinking and driving. And the best place for us to do that is on a DMB form. We have several forms here. Okay. probably the first one that you see is this. I'm sorry. This is A.
No. You're going to see, Mr. Chair, Don Phillips from Representative Miller's office. There are four forms that we're giving you, one that DMV uses for new people who apply for new driver's licenses. That looks like this. This is the normal form that they give folks right now when they come in to get a driver's license. You'll see a lot of boxes on the back side that's filled in by their administration. We thought we'd do a little experiment, and so we took the middle of the form and moved it down about 3/4 of an inch and inserted our statement, and it fits great. And just a suggestion, but just so you can get kind of a feel for what it might look like on the form. We've had some discussions with DMV, and they've talked about how there's no room and how they'd have to create a brand new form just for our statement. And we just thought we'd try an experiment and see how it looked. Obviously, I did this in the space of about 20 minutes with my computer on my desk, and I'm no computer whiz by any stretch of the imagination, nor am I a graphic designer, and I'm sure the folks at DMV could do a much better job than I did. And then you'll see the form that Ann was referring to, and as far as we know, this is the one that they give folks when you get your driver's license renewed. And it has kind of the motor voter at the bottom. The problem, and you'll see we inserted, you'll see the normal form, and then at the top you'll see where we inserted the new DUII statement and a place to sign next to it. The concern that we had was on both of these forms, you'll see a part where they ask for medical information. And it talks about how the medical information is confidential. And we just didn't want folks signing below the medical information thinking that signing their DUII statement was also going to be confidential, because it's not. So we wanted to make sure that the DUII statement was in a location all of its own, separate from the medical information. And I know we can't write an amendment to micromanage DMV to do this with their forms. We were just giving you an idea of what it might look like. We'd rather they do it through their own administrative rulemaking process, because that's the appropriate venue. Just to give you an idea of what it might look like when you're going to get your driver's license renewed or get a new license.
Okay. Are there any questions for the panel?
What?
Yes, Representative Pozanski and then Representative Barker.
And this is to the panel, because I can't remember when we talked about this before. Was there testimony previously about other states that use this approach? And if so, just for the record, how many? Just to refresh our memory.
To our knowledge there, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bruce Pratt, we did not find any other states that are using a similar state.
Representative Barker?
Thank you, Chair. We're not going to put it into law, but to help DMV, it would be helpful if they could, when they print those forms, print that in a different color so it stands out, or box it or something, so that it's clear when people sign that they are paying attention and know what they're signing. And I think this piece fits in very nicely with the previous piece about being fined for refusal to blow. I mean, because this is telling them once again, do not drink and drive. The message is the people can't be told enough.
Is there anybody else? Okay, thank you. Yes, I'm sorry, Representative Jensen, I missed the signal.
I'm sorry. I see we have some DMV folks here.
I know that too. I'm going to ask them to come up when we're done with this panel, if that's all right with you. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I could add, you'll see the fiscal here. We could have Susie Jordan from LFO come up and address that if you'd like. But as you'll notice, they listed what the agency had projected their cost might be. LFO reviewed that, reviewed the information that we gave them, and the next line, I think, pretty much is our bottom line, that the cost that might be associated with this can be absorbed into their current budget. And you're
Thank
not
you.
Looking at a fiscal here.
Thank you.
So there is no fiscal statement?
There is a fiscal statement. There is a statement. It just simply says on the bottom, it says, given that DMV maintains 64 field offices, the Legislative Fiscal Office believes this level of additional staff support could be absorbed within existing resources.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Taylor? I just wanted to, A, give you a chance to say anything if you needed to, or B, make you available to answer questions if the committee had any.
You bet. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor with the Department of Transportation. I may have missed it at the beginning. Are we talking about the Dash 1 amendments at this point on the bill? Because that did change the fiscal considerably because it lessens the number of forms that it's trying to change. When we look at this, we feel that the most efficient way to implement this would be on the actual camera card document, in which it would, which is a standard form, and that way we're not trying to change one form one way and one form another way. We're just changing the one form. It's the same form you sign to get your license. Everybody has to sign it. We would make a separate spot so that, you know, it would have its own little space and separate signature line, et cetera. I don't know about a different color ink. We would certainly look at it, but I believe they all come out black because it comes out of the printer. And as far as the fiscal, this does become a requirement for getting a license. If you don't sign it, you don't get your license, so there may be some conversation there. The fiscal impact for us, you know, just across the board with the amount of transactions we're dealing with is about one FTE, and whether or not that's absorbed is up to Ways and Means. But the fiscal impact is about $85,000 in the first biennia and about $81,000 in the second biennia.
So is this the form? I want to make sure that this is not the form you're talking
about.
That
is not the form we would do. We would do. I haven't seen. I don't know which forms you've got.
But you would.
No, it's not that one either. That's your driver's license. It's the separate form that comes off the printer that is the data card that makes that driver's license. No, it's not that.
All right.
No. It's a data card that comes off the printer that has the medical information on it also. Has the data information that's going to make the license that, you know, Representative Anderson's holding up. And it has a signature line on it that you're signing on.
Okay.
And we have a separate one for this.
Okay. Well, and the bill doesn't prescribe where you have to put it.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think that's wisdom probably. Is there any? Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is space on the back side of the card. And as Representative Barker pointed out, it could be done in blue or red or black. So it might be...
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that is the actual driver's license. That's not the form that you're going to be signing in order to get the license. It's going to be done ahead of time on the paper form, is what I'm trying to say, so that we microfilm it and have a copy of it.
Okay. All right. All of us, when we're done here at the legislature, are going to apply to be in charge of your forms department, I think. That's where we're headed. Anything else? Anybody else here to testify on 2900? Or, I'm sorry, on 2901? Representative Crummell, did you have a question?
Well, I, no. I'm going to just hold up.
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
I'll,
You can...
Could I ask questions later?
Yes, Representative Crummell reserves the right to ask questions about House Bill 2901 when we're talking about Senate bills. Okay.
That might be the appropriate time.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2901. I'm going to open a work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Prasansky.
Move the Dash 1s in House Bill 2901.
Representative Prasansky moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2901. Is there any discussion on that motion? Any objection? The ones are in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Prasansky.
Move House Bill 2901 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Does this need a referral?
It does not. Because of the way the fiscal is written with the word absorb, which is going to be my new magic word on fiscal, is absorb. Then absorption. So it doesn't need to go to Ways and Means.
That's something new that we've learned.
Yeah, the absorption.
I'll remember that too.
Okay. There's a scientific.
So the motion is to move House Bill 2901 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? All right. Call the roll, Ann.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative
Crummell? Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Zomsky?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2901 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As amended, Carrier. Barker, you've already got yours for the day.
Sorry, that's why I didn't raise my hand.
Yeah, so does Prasansky. Representative Anderson, you want this one? Okay, Representative Anderson. I feel like I'm neglecting this end of the table, but you guys are just sitting there sort of...
Just go ahead and neglect away.
Docile-like.
Just forget the waivers, okay?
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and then close. That's the extent of our agenda today, committee. So I wish you a pleasant weekend and a happy Mother's Day.
What do we do with the other two?
We're going to go off the record.
What?
We're off the record. No, we're not.